Golf Smarter number 701 is brought to you by Autoslash.com, who can help you find the lowest rate possible for your next car rental. The optimal performance swing that's biomechanically and anatomically valid with Kidon Kanwar.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Kidon.
Thanks for having me on, Fred. Hello there.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
This is very exciting for me to have you on the show because we don't get that deep into the biomechanics and we don't get into the, with somebody in your website, it says the anatomically valid golf swing. And I'm really intrigued by what you present and why it's important to the average golfer, how it's going to help them.
Yes, absolutely, Fred.
So why don't we start with a little bit of your background to explain how you got to this point with your life in golf? Did you start playing when you were young?
I started when I was 16 years old. My dad was very busy in his profession, so maybe we'd play once a month. And we both totally sucked at golf. And then I got married. I got married to a man who was highly obsessed with golf. And I said, if you can't beat them, you've got to join them. So I said, now I suck at this game, how to join his group of friends who don't really want a woman golfer in their midst. So it's been a search of a lifetime to hit the ball further and better and thus improve my scoring. And that's basically how I've persevered, like a terrier with a grabbing hold of your leg and never letting go with the golf swing. And I've been teaching golf now for 30 years and researching the golf swing for the past 25 years.
So at what point did you get better than your husband? And then he quit playing.
No, not quite. But the only reason I've got better is that he's got older. And then you come to a point where you're a senior golfer and you cannot physically hit the ball as far. But Fred, I have a remedy for that as well.
Yeah, so, that's definitely one of the things that I wanted to bring up is that you are concentrating on golf for seniors. But I'm really fascinated by your transition from being somebody who sucked at golf to all of a sudden, and I'm sure it's not all of a sudden, but then you're teaching golf and you have your own method.
So it didn't happen overnight. I was like a terrier with a bone, just determined to find a way to hit the ball further and hit it better and therefore score better. And so I've tried every possible movement. I've been to different golf instructors. I've been teaching the swing for the past 30 years. And every time my students couldn't hit the ball further, I'd think about what can I help them to do. And then I've researched the golf swing for the past 25 years. And over time, I realized these are things that golfers can do and these are things that they cannot do. And then I've been able to be in academia in full-time graduate school for the past 8+ years. And I was able to validate either through coursework or through more research some of the ideas that I had. So the golf swing I've developed has been researched at every phase of its development. And even recently, I just completed my PhD dissertation data collection researching the swing. And even from just that, I've learned so much that it's been an amazing journey, and now it's kind of exponentially improved until it's at a stage where I hope soon to fulfill my lifelong goal. Don't laugh, Fred. Do you promise?
No.
You don't promise not to laugh?
All no, right. I don't.
Go ahead. You can have a hearty laugh then. My goal for the past 12 years, and I've said this to anyone who would listen, is to be Tiger Woods' next golf instructor.
Wow.
So, of course, everybody has a hearty laugh. Go ahead, all of you in the audience. Laugh if you like. But the fact is that which of his golf instructors understood the design of the body joint by joint so that each joint in the whole system or the whole kinematic chain could be positioned so that it can give you good performance and reduce the likelihood of being injured. So the swing that I've developed, which I used to call the minimalist golf swing, and after I finish my dissertation, I'm thinking of calling it TOPS, T-O-P-S, which would be an acronym for the Optimal Performance Swing. It's really taken a long time to develop, and it's been completely God's will as far as I'm concerned.
Hmm. I'm not going to laugh at you for wanting to be Tiger's instructor. I remember one time I even asked Tony Manzoni, who we talked about earlier, off air. I asked Tony if you had the chance to teach Tiger, what would be the first thing you would tell him? So let's just flush that out a little bit, because you know Tiger's body is not what it was, as all of us are. Our bodies age, it deteriorates, we go through injuries, and it affects our golf game. If you had the opportunity, if Tiger is listening and he's intrigued, how would you approach him? What would you tell him?
Okay, so what I would tell him is that the typical golf swing sucks in terms of both performance and in terms of injury. And what do I mean by typical? You could have a classic swing, a modern swing, a stack and tilt, a swing developed by Mr. A or a swing developed by Mr. Y. Any swing that you have has two aspects that make it suck. The reason is that, as I've discovered through being in academia for 8 years, there are two big problems. Your downswing lasts 1/3 of a second. How much can you effectively do in that time? If you take out the stopwatch on your cell phone, I challenge you the first time you do it to start and stop at 1/3 of a second. It's really very tough, and that's just with one finger on your stopwatch of your cell phone. Imagine all the different joints of your body having to reposition themselves from top of backswing to impact in the correct sequence to give you the ball slide that you want. And the second issue is that the human brain and central nervous system are designed to have maximum resources reserved for your limbs, your arms and your legs. But we don't use the legs much in golf, so basically for the arms. They do not have adequate resources for trunk motion, and yet we are telling the golfer to have very sophisticated movements of the torso. Keep your pelvis here, rotate your shoulders there, do this, do that. So what I have developed actually cuts out a lot of unnecessary movements, so you can very easily finish a simplified downswing in 1/3 second with much more efficiency. And secondly, I have you rotate your body away from the target, closed, as it needs to be at the top of the backswing, before your backswing begins. So before you begin your backswing, your setup involves a rotation of your torso to face away from target. In the backswing, you only move your arms, and you never lift the right side of your body because it's supposed to be down at address and it's supposed to be down at impact. So why on earth would you lift it up at the top? Just keep it where it needs to be for the downswing, and you're all set. You've cut out movement. You're not making any sophisticated torso moves. And it simplifies the whole thing. And simple in golf is really good and is really what we need.
And Tiger says, that's ridiculous. I'm just playing devil advocate
yes,
here.
Yes, absolutely. Tiger says it's ridiculous. I say, well, Tiger, in that case, keep having your injuries. Keep having your double cross. I can explain to you in 2 seconds why at the drop of a hat you suddenly hook the ball left when you're least expecting it. And we need to safeguard you, not just because you're older, but because you've had a history of injury against further injury. When I have you rotate your torso in advance, it rotates the pelvis. And this thing keeps the entire spine aligned from your neck, which nobody has considered to be a part of the spine in golf, to your tailbone. Everything is kept in a straight line, and different parts of the spine are not twisted against one another. So it keeps your spine safe. Your rotation takes place from your pelvis, which is a much easier movement. And then a lot of people have challenged me, where does the speed come from in this tiny little movement? The speed, Fred, comes from what is known in many sports, such as boxing, for example, as core stillness for distal speed. What that means is the more still your core is, your arms can, like in boxing, your arms can really lash out at fast speed so that you can connect with your target very easily. And this is the same concept I'm using. It's very little, very late, at the last minute, very well-timed speed, so that everything you have goes into the ball. Nothing goes into the air around the ball or into the ground. You know, there's this joke that these two ants make. There's a senior ant and a junior ant, and a golfer is about to hit the ball. So the junior ant says, hey, this beginner golfer is going to hit the ball. What should we do? The senior ant says, let's just get on top of the ball because we'll be safe. So the junior ant says, what? How can we be safe on the ball? The senior ant says, oh, this is just a beginner. He's going to hit the ground deep under the ball. He's going to hit the air around the ball, but he's never going to hit the ball, so we are going to be perfectly safe. So that's not the case with this swing. You connect the ground right exactly where you want to. And the beauty of it is you do nothing in the downswing. You know, I must tell you a joke, Fred.
I know that wasn't about a joke.
No, this is another joke. I know nothing about the difference between a debit and a credit. However, if anyone tells me they have a business background when they come for a lesson, this is what I tell them. The setup is 95% of the job. It's like planning your portfolio. I'm going to invest in this company and this company and this company, and these are the numbers of shares I'm going to buy. The backswing is like 5% of the job. It's like buying the shares or the stocks when the time is right. And then the downswing is the do-nothing part of the golf swing. It's the time when you sit back and count your money as your dividends roll in. So this is how the swing is divided up, the minimalist golf swing or the optimal performance golf swing. You do literally nothing in the downswing because interfering in the downswing is ridiculous and pointless. There is no time you're going to mess something up.
Wow. That's not a joke.
That's not, and really, and this comes from motor control theory, where you're told that if you try to restrict some part, like say I tell my elbow I want it to be in a certain position, yes, I will restrict that part, but then my shoulder and my wrist and other parts of the upper limb will get into more variable positions in order to facilitate a restricted elbow. So really, we want to position you in your setup and top of backswing, so that you have nothing left to do but let the downswing happen. That's how it should be really in golf.
Wow.
And the other motor control principle that this whole movement is based on, people say, hey, but I can't make this big swing change. How can I have been playing 40, 50, 60 years? So I tell them, your golf swing is going nowhere. It's like when Tiger changed to a sort of stack and tilt movement. Even now when he's trying to do different things, the stronger, more dominant aspects of stack and tilt can still be seen in his movement. It's very difficult to change a movement. So we just put a layer on top of your existing swing. We give you a new setup, which will trigger the new backswing. As soon as you go back to your old setup, you'll get back your old backswing. And if you don't, you know, you think you could be better with the old backswing, you can continue with that. But this will never mess you up, because as soon as you set up the new setup, the new backswing will get triggered automatically once you get the hang of it.
Okay, very interesting. I have so many places I want to go with this. But before we do that, let me just say that this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Autoslash.com. Well, we've returned from a great week in Boston. I got to tell you, we are so happy that we rented a car for an entire week that we were there, as opposed to just over a weekend. Now, even though we walked an average of 8 miles a day while we were tooling around the city, the weekend plan was to drive up to New Hampshire and spend some time with some, you know, family members up there and just soaking, because it was an incredibly hot weekend. It was that terrible heat wave that crossed all over the Northeast and Midwest. So luckily, we just spent the weekend lying around in the water. It was perfect. But we were up in New Hampshire. And then on the way back, we went into Maine to do some outlet shopping. I was scheduled to play golf one day. Unfortunately, it rained, so we didn't get to play. But more importantly, the savings on the car rental we received from AutoSlash definitely made it worthy of having the car for a week. Because when I first booked the car, I was quoted $685 for a full week. And then just a couple days later, because I was employing AutoSlash to find better rates, I received a notice of lower pricing and ended up paying only $480. Now, if my math is correct, that's 30% savings, just as Jonathan has been telling us all along. Every email I received after that from AutoSlash brought me to the same price, so I never had to do anything again. But I did save a lot of money thanks to the completely free AutoSlash.com. I've been telling you about them for months, and I'd really like to hear your story. If you've used AutoSlash, tell me about it. Write to me. Click on the Hey Fred button and let me know what you think of AutoSlash if you've had the chance. That's AutoSlash.com. Remember, they're not a rental company. They're a free online rental car booking service that tracks your upcoming reservations, then finds the lowest rate for your next car rental. Next time you're planning on renting a car for pleasure or business, check out the free service. That's AutoSlash.com. AutoSlash. That's AutoSlash.com. Now, Kiran, or is it Dr. Kanwar?
Or to be, Dr. Kanwar to be in the next, hopefully.
Dr. To be Kanwar.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's talk about that, about the research that you're doing. Where did you start with this research? I mean, there's been so much written about the swing over decades and decades from the perfectly mechanical swing to not thinking about your swing. There's so many things that have been written. Where did you start with your research, and how did you get to, and let's talk about what you're doing today in this research.
Actually, I was fortunate looking back on things. I grew up in Mumbai at a time when any golf lessons you had were from like little boys that were caddy boys from the slums around the golf course, and they became golf teachers, and they just taught you by whatever they knew about their own swings and from intuition. So I kind of grew up in a golf instruction vacuum and figured things out for myself in my own swing. Then I was fortunate enough that I came to the U.S. way back in 1990, and Hank Haney and David Ledbetter, in those days, one sent a telegram to say, hey, I'd like to come and watch you teach. So I sent them a telegram, and they were kind enough to say, sure, come and watch.
Wow.
So I learned a little bit from them. And then I've been to several other golf instructors over those few years. And I always was envious of my son coming to school, undergrad to the U.S. It was always, wow, look at these lucky kids these days going to the U.S. For an education. I said, wouldn't it be fantastic if I could study the biomechanics of the golf swing? But there was no such thing. And somehow I just said, okay, I'll do a GRE and see if some school admits me. Then I got admitted to a school, and my husband and son said, we have to finance this at this stage of her life. But they did. That's how I did a wonderful master's at Logan University in St. Louis. And because it's a chiropractic school, I was fortunate that I learned every single subject that's important for human movement. It's called kinesiology, means the study of all mm-hmm. movement of the human human and other organisms. Mm-hmm. And basically, it gives you all the physical and mental components. So I learned anatomy, which absolutely is the most important subject for a better understanding of the golf swing. And then I learned biomechanics, which tells you about the external forces and how you can use them to manipulate your movement. I learned about motor control, which tells you how the brain and spinal cord are able to coordinate movement. Then I learned a lot about injury mechanisms. I learned about sports psychology, nutrition, and fitness. So now I have all the background to not just be someone's instructor, but to be the golf science consultant, really. And this was a fabulous journey at Logan University. And then I said, hey, I turned out to be quite the nerd. I love it. So I want to be in full-time academia. I don't think I've had enough courses in biomechanics, and everybody's saying biomechanics is the big word of the day. So I went into Texas Women's University, where a lot of golf research is done, specifically on the biomechanics. And I did my biomechanics coursework from there. Again, I was very fortunate that my minor for my PhD was from a most wonderful school called the University of North Texas Health Science Center in Fort Worth. And they have a superb group there where I did my anatomy, cadaver-based anatomy, with the medical students, and that was a phenomenal experience. And now I've put in 8 years into academia and really have studied 12 to 14 hours a day, struggling through stuff that, I mean, I had a big gap in my education from my undergrad to my graduate years. So I really put in a lot of hard work and have made notes and made written down a lot of information that would be useful to me as a golf instructor. So, it's been a very exciting journey, and wow. I'm excited that I turned out to be quite the nerd. Now I'm a golf nerd.
and golf instructors, the ones that I've spoken to, and there have been a couple at this point, they don't come across as being incredibly academic. So when you present your findings and to golf instructors, what's the reaction?
There's always doubt. No golf instructor wants to say you're better than me. Uh-huh. If you're a golf instructor and I'm a golf instructor, most golf it's like a very territorial situation, unfortunately, because there are so many more instructors than there are places to teach out of. And I'm not competing with anyone. I'm saying this is where I've got my information. Try it. If you like it, use it. The other thing I'm saying is that I don't have a partial solution. Like even the PhD researchers in biomechanics, someone will be researching ground reaction forces and tell golf instructors this is how the ground interacts with the body. Someone else will be researching the forces and torques at the hands, and they'll give information. How does the instructor collect all of that information and decide what to use? You know, nobody's giving you a holistic solution. That can only come if you have your own educational background to fall back on. And I really have a solution for what every joint in the body is supposed to be doing. Not that I'm going to tell you, okay, Fred, your left knee has to be 2 degrees down, or your head needs to be tilted 1 inch to the right. I'm not going to tell you that. It's just very, very basic, more as basic as if I was teaching a five-year-old. But I have all the knowledge that comes with what I'm saying to you. So, yes, there's a lot of teachers and there's a lot of methods. And then everybody has some good points. But overall, most golf instructors have sort of, since the time of the Shepherds of Scotland, we've all passed down information which has come to a great extent intuitively. And some changes have been added when Jack Nicklaus said, golf my way, or a Tommy Armour said, this is the way to golf. So some, or Ledbetter said, let the dog wag the tail, not the tail, the golf. So little bits and pieces have been added. But the main issues that have never been tackled is how to make an efficient movement in 1/3 second that the downswing lasts, and how to prevent the brain having to coordinate the trunk movement, which is the brain doesn't have the design capacity to do that to a great extent.
So our teachers today, you know, I brought this up recently that I'm not a huge fan of consistency, this notion of consistency, especially when I watch golf on television and some of the best golfers of the world, and they're not hitting the ball perfect every time. They just hit it perfectly more often than we do. But they still get themselves in trouble. They're very good at getting out of trouble. Is consistency attainable?
Yes, absolutely. So I've completed my dissertation data collection, and I only gave people 4 lessons practically back to back over 4 or 5 days between my 2 lab sessions. And I've measured the standard deviation, which is how much they vary from shot to shot, and the standard deviation of their club speed, club path, and club angle of approach are the same or better after than they had before. So just in 4 sessions, I'm getting you to be consistent. I'm always, so what this swing does, it first of all cuts out the entire left side of the fairway. You cannot have what the TV announcers seem to be calling a double cross movement these days. So it cuts out that. It makes sure you arrive from the inside at a suitably shallow angle. You never descend too steeply into the ball. And your sequencing is always correct, because it prevents, this swing actually locks out your ability to come over the top by the way it's designed. So it can give you better speed, path, angle of approach, and consistency, and reduce the loads on many of your joints. So the reason, and of course, golf golfers in general, not just instructors, golfers in general, even the pros believe, oh, I have to just keep at it and one day I'll win and one day I'll lose. I won't win. Tom Watson, such a senior golfer, said in a press conference, I have a couple of feels for what I'm going to do this week. How can top golfers be relying on a feel? What is feel? Do you have any idea what feel is, Fred?
It depends what we're talking about. And when I know we're talking about golf, to me, feel is more around short game.
So this is my response to anyone who says that you have to have a feel in golf. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I say that if women had a feel, the population of the earth would be much smaller than it is. Because if you remember the feel of labor pain, you may never have another kid ever again in this life. So feel is very ephemeral. It comes and goes. You need to lock out your ability to get into bad positions. And you need to be in such a stable position that you cannot help but arrive from the inside at better speed and at a suitably shallow angle of approach.
So what is wrong? Well, before we even discern what is wrong, what do you consider the typical swing? And then we'll get into what's wrong with it.
Yeah, the main things that I consider to be a typical swing is where your right shoulder, which if you set up at address and look at yourself, your right shoulder will be lower simply because your right hand is lower. At impact, your right shoulder will be lower once again. At the top of the backswing, you've lifted your right shoulder. And why on earth have you done that? I had a participant in my dissertation research recently. I said, why do you lift your arms? Why do you lift your shoulder? So he said, oh, probably because I lift my arms. And it made complete sense. It's just something golfers have done intuitively since the time of the Shepherds of Scotland. We've never thought about why are we doing this? And that's the one movement that really needs to be gotten rid of, because I've read tons of research papers and none of them can correlate the lifting of the torso or the trunk or the thorax during the backswing with an increase in club head speed. So why do we need this movement at all? So I cut out your ability to lift your right side, and it is rather counterintuitive. It takes a while of getting rid of that whole lift your right side and drop your right side routine. And then I finish your torso rotation during the setup. So all you do is an arms movement in the backswing, and it all comes together like a stack of dominoes falling one after the other in the downswing without you having to think about it.
Hmm. And how is the swing that you're developing here that probably looks awkward and strange to most golfers, is that the kind of resistance you get when people look at it and going, yeah, that doesn't look right?
Yes, it's been called goofy, it's been called weird, it's been called counterintuitive. And the reason being is that you had to make a lot of rotation of your torso before the backswing began. So people said, how can I be turning around to look at somebody standing behind me practically before I set up for the swing? So now with time, the amount of rotation has reduced. It's literally been fine-tuned to the bare minimum you need. So literally you could make a little rotation and nobody would know in the blink of an eye it would be done. It wouldn't be as obvious as it was before. And the rest of the swing, unless you have a technical bent of mind and you're really looking, nobody would know. So it's much less weird and goofy looking than it was before. And it's really, really very precise now. Based on all these years of working on it, fine-tune. It's there now after I've even collected all my dissertation data results.
Hmm. Are you familiar with an instructor named Jim Venetos?
I've heard the name. I've been asked by a lot of people, is your swing like this? Or is your swing like natural golf? Is it like Mo Norman's? To which I say, I have looked at those. I've not studied them in detail, but it has its own flavor. It's completely different. The magic move of the whole movement, which nobody on this planet has thought of, is to keep the right side, if you're a right-handed golfer, lower than the left side from start of backswing to impact.
Hmm. Yeah, Jim talks about stillness, and I think that his starting position is quite similar to yours. How is your swing able to prevent, if the word prevent is correct, potential injury?
the word prevent is not correct because we Thanks. Don't know where you're at right now. I've seen in a cadaver an ACL ligament in the knee. Like we had these like fun students who just popped out the whole kneecap and looked at this ACL, which is such a discussed ligament. And it was literally a thread. It was literally the size of the diameter of a thread. So we don't know where you're at. We don't know your potential for injury. And injury has very many causative factors. It could be hormonal. It could be genetic. There's so much. But we hope to reduce the mechanical loads on the joints. And how do we know that we're reducing mechanical loads? When you stand on force plates, everybody these days in golf is talking about ground reaction force. And they're literally, Fred, if I may make a bit of a sort of crass joke, they're literally telling you to jump up and down on the force plates like a loose seat at a mixed party. And that jumping up and down is spiking the force that you see reacting from the force plate, which means your muscles are putting in excessive effort. And the effort, we don't know how much of the effort is going into the ball and how much is going into the air around the ball and how much is going into the ground in thumping out a huge big divot, you know. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that effort is completely wasted. That thumping the ball may be correlated with greater speed, but that speed is not directed necessarily into the ball and in the correct direction. There is greater momentum. It's like a long driver has all these body parts moving to the maximum amount and then hitting the ball. If they slice the ball two fairways to the right, then how does it help them? They're not getting the distance that they can. This swing gives you better distance by being more precise and having a very fast movement at the very last minute. So there's no excessive movement going on. And the other movements that do not show such a spike on the force plate and are very efficient is rotation. The movements that show a lot of spiking on force plates, it shows you're putting a lot of muscle effort, is when you move side to side like a weight shift and when you jump up and down like a squat jump kind of. Those are two dangerous movements. You want to avoid those. And the movements that are subtle and don't show big force plate spikes are not going to put as much load from the ground up into your body. So those are the movements you have to prioritize.
Mm-hmm. Does it work better for younger people versus seniors or the other way around?
Okay, so as I said, I've been telling people I want to be Tiger's next golf instructor. It works for I don't know how it works for long drivers because they use every joint and they go into all sorts of peculiar positions. I've never tried it on a long driver in recent years. But for anyone from Tiger to, as I call it, a Tyro, which means beginner, I have an ebook on my website, which I wrote years ago. It says DIY golf from Tiger to Tyro. So it works for anyone because it really simplifies the movement. It's great for women because, you know, when you rotate a little bit, if you have a big chest or if you're a person with a big tummy, it's all moved out of the way of your movement. It's great for women. It's great for juniors. It's great for seniors. And I have, by coincidence, developed quite an extensive research background in senior golfers, and I'm in the process of trying to set up a scheme called Golf Adventures for Seniors. You know, you always see all these junior camps all the time, all over the country, and you wonder why are these poor kids who really don't want to, a lot of them want to be in golf, being shoved into golf, whereas we seniors who have people who have disposable incomes, who live much longer these days, who are retired, have plenty of time, and would love to be involved in some fun activity. Why are we being deprived of the fun activities in golf? Not just hit balls, go on the golf course, but just some fun activities that would be helpful for you as you age. We won't call them exercise because that's boring and passe, but they will make you have some better strength, better cognitive facilities, and better gait, speed. All of this, I've been fortunate enough to have been involved in a fabulous team at the University of Southern California's Division of Biokinesiology, where we have been researching golf for healthy aging. So
fabulous.
It's a great sport for older people, but I'm very keen to be teaching some tour pros as well.
Well, we wish you all the luck in the world in getting hold of Tiger and hope that
Thank
it works
so
for
much,
him.
Sir.
That would be amazing. because we can say we knew you first.
Yes.
Where are you based, and how do people get in touch with you if they want to get a lesson?
So currently I'm based in Los Angeles, and I love it here and hopefully never leave. And the best way to get in touch with me is through my website, www.mgs.golf, and it also has a section of about which gives you my credentials and everything. So that's where it's at.
Okay, so that's mgs.golf. No .com, just .golf.
No, yes.
Okay, very good. And in Los Angeles area. Okay, well, that's amazing. This was really interesting, and I really appreciate your time. It's great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Fred.
Hey, if you're new to Golf Smarter, welcome. You may not be aware of this, but a couple times each month, we do a random drawing of a great golf prize, and our next giveaway is one of our most popular, and for good reason. This is your chance to win a brand new customized Seymour putter, courtesy of Seymour.com. If you're not familiar with Seymour putters, check out, at the very least, check out Seymour.com, but then listen to episode number 692 called Taking Care of Old Mr. Three Wiggle with Cody Hale of Seymour Putters, and you'll learn more and want one for your own, I promise. So sign up right now at golfsmarter.com and click on the Enter Now banner at the top of the homepage. Deadline for entry is midnight Pacific time, 3 a.m. Eastern, Sunday, August 11, 2019. This week on Golf Smarter Mulligans, we'll meet a senior instructor at the David Ledbetter Schools, Aaron Fagan. Get your free subscription for Golf Smarter and Golf Smarter Mulligans wherever you get your favorite podcasts, including YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and of course, Apple Podcasts. Golf Smarter Mulligans is supported by Autoslash.com and TwoGuysWithGolfBalls.com. Before we go, I want to go into the mailbag to share a conversation I've been having with a listener, David Sturtz, who says that he drives around with me during the day listening to Golf Smarter during work. David's a police officer outside of the city of Syracuse in New York, protecting what he says the massive 0.8 square mile megalopolis of the Village of Liverpool as part of the Village of Liverpool Police Department. So I asked him, what was the most recent excitement that we shared together in his squad car? And here's what he wrote back. As for our most exciting day, the most recent time was last week. You were informing me of, I can't even remember, but I remember being annoyed that dispatch interrupted you for the umpteenth time that day. It was right at the end of our shift when a call came in of a male with access to guns who was threatening suicide. Well, you had to go on radio silence for obvious reasons while we proceeded toward the house. As we're approaching the home, a message comes through dispatch advising us that the male subject said that he's going to end it now. This message was simultaneous with us making an initial pass past the residence. And as you and I pass the house, the garage door opens and the front lights come on. My initial assumption was the suicide was actually a cop ambush. So we parked down the block and I went tactical while you stayed in the car. Long story short, there were no guns, but we were met by some less than friendly dogs. It all worked out okay, with the man being taken to get some help. You and I finished our conversation on the way home, as we do every night. LOL, right? Thanks, David. That was exhilarating, especially from where I'm sitting. And what about you? What do you do when you're listening to Golf Smarter? Every time I'm on the range and I see someone with earbuds, I'm tempted to ask what they're listening to, but I never do. So what's your Golf Smarter story? Please share with me by clicking on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.